during combinatorics. And, well, the thing I'm going to do is to show you a way to do calculate, for instance, the partition function of string theory, for instance, in the bosonic case, in a way, in a combinatorial way, and how these calculations can be done for different topologies. And at the end, I'm going to propose like a problem which is related to these finite symmetric spaces, and I was telling you about. Well, if you, for instance, have the Polyakov action of strings, it's given by this. And if you take the usual Feynman path integral, so you know that you have to integrate over all embeddings of the world sheet in spacetime and over all metrics in the world sheet surface. There's a way in which you can discretize this action and write it in this way. I mean, most of these things I am going to talk about have been done by Professor Jan Amper, and in literature, in some literature of Professor Jan, he has a way in which he shows how you can get this discretized action. So this. Okay. what this action means that you're summing over all. This is embedding. I mean, you have a discretization is like you have the surface and you triangulate the surface, the worksheet topology, and you triangulate it, and this sum is taking over the embeddings. I mean, you embed this triangulation in spacetime, and then you're just mapping points, vertices of this triangulation to spacetime. And this is what it means when you have, you're summing over all edges. I mean, when you have a vertex I that is joined to vertex j by a mesh, you're considering this sum over all edges. And this is a constant, like a coupling constant, and number of triangles in your triangulation. This is what this means. And the partition function then will be given, like in the continuum case, by an integral over all metrics on embeddings. But in this case, the embeddings are just, you are just mapping points, discrete points to spacetime. So you're just integrating over over finite number of variables in the case in which you have, for instance, a compact topology. And the integral over all metrics reduces to a sum over all triangulations of the surface. So this is the meaning of this. Now, if you do this, I mean, this is another way in which you can write the partition function. I mean, the action a different way. You define this matrix, which is called Laplacian. It's a discrete Laplacian, and it's defined by when a vertex I is the same. I mean, you take a vertex, you just write the degree of the vertex in this entrance, and if vertex I is joined to vertex j, you take -1, and if the two vertices are not joined by any edge, you write 0. So this is a square matrix, yeah, which is the size is the number of faces, I mean the number of vertices times the number of vertices of the triangulation. That's the size of the matrix. So this is called the Laplacian, and it is easy to see that the action can be written in this way with this Laplacian here. So like you're multiplying this matrix with these vectors, like you're thinking of vectors. and the number of triangles. Then you have to do, first, for instance, you do this integral. That the first step is to do the integral over all the embeddings of the all of the points, how they vary in space-time. And you cannot do this directly, because the thing is that this is just a green, a Gaussian integral, if you see. Because it was given by some coordinates to square. Yeah, so this is a Gaussian integral, but the thing is that it is this Laplacian matrix has an determinant which vanishes. And so you cannot integrate over all vertices, over all positions. What you have to do is like, it is like something like calling, if you want to call it, fixing a gauge. So this means that you are fixing one vertex, one of the vertices of the triangulation in space time, and then you vary over all the other positions of the remaining ones. So you fix one. And then you integrate over all positions with one vertex, which is fixed. And then that reduces the integral to one in which this matrix is reduced to a matrix in which you delete an I and J, you delete a row and a column and a row. And it doesn't matter which vertex you choose to fix. So the result of the integral, if you compute the integral, it's given by this, like the Gaussian one. So you have here a determinant, and then you have the sum over all triangulations. This determinant, it's something nice in mathematics, because in mathematics, if you have the Laplacian in combinatorics, for instance, and you want to know when you have a triangulation or any graph, it can be also applied to graph theory. Any graph, and you want to know the number of trees of the graph, the number of trees, spanning trees. It means that you take the whole vertices and all the trajectories which are not cycles inside the graph or inside the triangulation. This is a tree. And the way to calculate the number of trees is precisely given by this determinant of the reduced matrix, Laplacian. So this is the number of trees in the triangulation. So you can think that maybe when your triangulation is bigger in a surface, the number of trees is growing as well. So I use here a trick, but okay. If you think of the dual, the dual means you're putting one vertex inside face and an edge for each other edge of the triangulation. And then you will have a face dual to a vertex of the triangulation. You will see that the dual is a trivalent graph. It has all the edges are trivalent. So this trivalent graph also has the same number of spanning trees. So you can think of this determinant. And if you think of that, then this matrix will have in the diagonal just three. You can see this trivalent graph. So you will have just the degrees of the vertices, which is three. You will have many threes, and you will have zeros on the other places, and you will have minus ones also. Minus ones. But you will have just at least three minus one in each column and row. At most. And you are also thinking about the reduced Laplacian term. So you are thinking of this determinant. So if you think of this like this, like if this will approximate my number of trees, the determinant of this, okay, this is not a very, very good approximation, but I use it anyway. But the main thing is that maybe finding new approximations of this, it's, for instance, a problem which could be studied, finding a better one. But for instance, if you use this approximation just to make things simple, then you can see that this number of triangles, for instance, if you call the number of triangles n, then you will see that the number of, and you call this, okay, number of vertices in the dual triangulation, it's number of vertices minus one here, because I have my minus one because I have one vertex fixed. So this is the that's why it's, you have minus one here. So the partition function in this way can be written like this, sum over all these triangulations. So you take these factors out, and you will have this n here. So you are summing over this n is, as I'm telling you, number of triangles. But you have number of vertices here. So you sum over all triangulations. Now, how do you sum over all triangulations? I mean, then this is the problem of, I mean, you can do it for each surface, and this is like an exercise, like showing how to do it for surface, for any surface. For instance, if I start and do it for a sphere, what will happen? Let's see. For instance, there is a theorem of a guy called Steinitz, which says that all triangulations of the spheres, all of the triangulations can be generated from one single triangulation, which is an irreducible triangulation. And this irreducible triangulation is given by the embedding of this graph, which is the tetrahedron, for instance, in the sphere. So it's just the tetrahedron. So this is the only irreducible triangulation of this of the sphere. And you can get all of the other triangulations by a certain moves called vertex splittings. So a vertex splitting is like when you do barycentric subdivisions. For instance, this is barycentric subdivision is a special case of this vertex splitting. But for instance, if you think of a barycentric subdivisions, you will see that if, for instance, you start with the tetrahedron, and if you have the tetrahedron, it has four faces, so it's a even number. But when you do a barycentric subdivision, you will add one vertex, and you will add three edges, and you will add two more faces. So that means that you have at the beginning four faces, and then you will have six in the next step with the first subdivision. That means you're always having an even number of faces. And the number of vertices can be written in this way, half the number of triangles plus two. And this plus two is just the Euler characteristic. So this can be seen that it will happen for any other surface, that you will have this plus the Euler characteristic. So then you will have that your sum can be approximated like something like this, with these numbers, and you're summing over natural numbers. You're just having just a sum. And when you are starting from two, because two times two here is four, and you're starting from four faces. So that's the first step, four faces. And you start with two here. That's what you start with, from two to infinity. With this factor here, I mean, if for instance, just think of the barycentric subdivisions. If you subdivide in one way, for instance, and finish with, suppose that you have 10 vertices in a step, and then you do another barycentric subdivision in a different very different way, and you end up with another 10 vertices. I mean, you cannot say if these two triangulations are the same or not. They may be not the same. They may be non-isomorphic. So this is the factor which you include here, to include all non-isomorphic triangulations as well, with the same number of vertices, for instance. And if you...
Sorry, can you just tell me this? Okay. I mean, in this lecture, it's also included all these statements made in the first statement in the lecture with the explanation.
Okay.
This is even more important.
It's even what?
These are even more important than...
Okay, but a part of this is that you're counting the different non-isomorphic triangulations.
That's a minor simplification mistake
that you made approximately to the
constraints of the
case. Okay. So well, if I use this, there is a paper with William Tut, in which he shows how many different triangulations you have with a fixed number of vertices, and it goes like this. So for instance, I use a very easy case here, in which you have this equals to this dimension and the factor. And if you restrict to this case, you will see that this sum will go like this. Well, the thing is that, for instance, for different surfaces, for other surfaces, this will get more complicated. This factor, this approximation of this 3 to this power is not exact. I mean, it's not, you can trust it, but anyway, so you can, it is a task to improve it, yeah? So that could be a problem you can, people can work on. But a nice thing is now that if you, I don't mention it here because it is more involved now, but if you think now that you are not working with real numbers or complex numbers, and you take a finite field, finite fields have a number of finite elements, and the number of elements in a finite field are a power, the number of elements are a power of a prime number. So with, for instance, you start with 3 and then with 5, and you can have also 3 to a power and pi to a power and so on. So you have this finite field. So they have finite number of elements. If you think this is the case, what you have is you can also define extensions of these other fields, and you can construct like an analog. These finite fields will be the analog of real numbers, real ones. And if you want to construct the analog of complex, you will have to extend these fields. When you go from real numbers to complex numbers, it is an extension. So you are adding root of minus 1. So in the same way, in finite fields, you can have roots of numbers, and you can extend it to a different one. And so this means you are extending it. And so this will be the analog of complex numbers. And there is also an analog of upper half plane. The Poincaré plane, half plane, in complex numbers is the upper half. Yeah. So there is also an analog of that thing, in which you take all of these elements in the finite field, in the extended one, which are not zero. So this is the analog of upper half plane, and then you can associate to each upper half plane a graph which is called finite symmetric space, and you add this to the finite. So for instance, it is known that for instance if you take 3, there is one graph which is the analog of the upper half plane, and it's given by an octahedron graph. Now if you go to 5, you will have 3 graphs which are non-isomorphic and which are drawn in a dodecahedron. So it has 20 vertices, but there are 3 ones which are not isomorphic. And then if you go to a different number, prime numbers, you will have different graphs associated to each of these. So you can work with this, combinatorially you're counting faces and you're counting number of spanning trees. So you can do this with the finite fields. And we can propose that you can study this partition function for this case. And the interesting thing is that you will have, instead of having a sum over all triangulations, you will just have, for each prime number, you will have a sum over all non-isomorphic graphs, which are just a finite number. So this sum will be always convergent, always. So, but the next thing will be like, if you want to think of quantizing more in some sense, but I just do it in a mathematical way. So you can think that you can also sum over prime numbers. So you are summing over all different graphs associated to these finite symmetric spaces, and then you are also summing over prime numbers. So this was like an exercise in order to show how the calculations go, but now my task now is to go to this finite fields case. And it will be interesting because why? Why do I do this? Because, for instance, in the literature, you can find string theory in non-Archimedean fields. non-Archimedean fields are like the real numbers or complex numbers, but they are also infinite. But the thing is that you can construct these non-Archimedean spaces. For instance, in non-Archimedean fields, you have non-Archimedean upper half planes as well. And these are given by trees, infinite trees. So people have studied string theory in non-Archimedean fields. So it would be nice to study the same in a finite field case. At least from a mathematical point of view. And also why this will be like strings, because you know when in string theory, the open string, in the open case, the worksheet can be diffeomorphic to upper half plane. So these finite symmetric spaces will be like the counterpart, for the finite fields. This will be thought as having the worksheet in an open string case, and something like that. So that's it.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? So, for any prime, there's more than one finite field. So, are you summing over all of those different fields?
Yeah. So for each prime number, yeah?
Yeah.
There is one field. And for each prime number, also, you can...
Well, I'm saying for each prime...
Sorry?
For each power of the prime, there's a field, right? Isn't it true for each power of a prime, there's a field?
Yeah.
A finite field?
Yeah. Finite field.
So that's an infinite number of
prime numbers, yeah.
Of finite fields,
yeah,
also.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, but for a fixed prime number or for a fixed power,
for a fixed
you
power.
Have a finite number of finite symmetric spaces in this finite field. So you sum over this.
Oh, so when you said summing over prime.
It will converge in this case, but okay, so if I sum over all these fields, I don't know what will happen, but. That's what I am saying. It is a problem to look for.
Are there further questions? So if not, let's thank the speaker.